When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hello and welcome to PFF Fantasy Football Podcast. Happy week 10. I'm your host, Ian Harditz, and we have a ton of talk about today. Sheesh Report, waiver wire, even some running back handcuff tiers, because why the hell not? It's a great day to be great after all. Joining me, as always, on this lovely Tuesday afternoon, PFF's finest resident expert ranker, all-around awesome guy, Nathan Yonke. Nate, what's up, my man?
Hey, doing well. We are halfway through the season. We've made it to the halfway point.
You could even argue more, Nate. You know, fantasy season usually ends in week 17. You know, some people a little better maybe than myself at keeping that, you know, pedal to the metal all throughout the playoffs. But at least in terms of winning those season-long best ball, dynasty, whatever have you, championships, we are more than halfway through. So crazy how time flies. And then you kind of start thinking back and it's like, well, actually, you know, quite a bit of time has indeed gone by. So with all that said, Nate, we're going to get to your waiver wire goodness in just a second. As we always do on this edition of the podcast, we like to finish things up with the previous week by going through all the things that really made us curse at our televisions, cry, just overall feel bad about ourselves. It is the Sheesh Report. All the near misses, better balls that should have been touchdowns, touchdowns that weren't called touchdowns because of penalties, just short, whatever reason. I've gone through, watched every single game, and I'm here to tell you why your fantasy team unfortunately couldn't get that W last week. First of all, the Sheesh player of week 9 has to go to the one, the only, Atlanta Falcons tight end Kyle Pitts. I mean, coming off that game in week 8 where he was able to get 80 yards, get a touchdown, it seemed like maybe things were finally turning around. And to be fair, like, he now has 16 targets over the past 2 weeks. Wasn't for lack of trying last week. It was for lack of quarterback performance. So just 27 yards, but Nate, 202 air yards out here, man. He had a wide open 73-yard potential touchdown that unfortunately Mariota couldn't put anywhere near him. Also had a chance for a 32-yard touchdown, but the ball was just out of reach. To be fair, it did look like the defender was a little bit early on that one. But Nate, I guess my beef with this, the big point that we lauded Kyle Pitts for coming out was the longest wingspan of any tight end or wide receiver measured in the last 20 years. I know there's some debate about Calvin Johnson, but I don't think it was official the way it was with Kyle Pitts at the combine. Whatever, fine. Maybe Calvin Johnson was actually longer and the articles I saw citing this were wrong. He's objectively one of the biggest targets of the last 2 decades plus. You can say NFL history. I doubt there were too many guys bigger than Kyle Pitts running around in the 70s. And Mariota can't even give him a chance, man. It's not like all those air yards were gimmies. My guy over at 4-4, John Daigle, likes to call them prayer yards. I agree with a lot of that, but just to see Mariota time and time again throw the ball downfield, and it doesn't even hit a hand. That's the part I can't get over, Nate. So unfortunate. It's going to continue to be a reality of the situation. And yeah, if you did have the, you know, displeasure of watching that Falcons game over the weekend, you were just saying sheesh a lot pretty much every single time the ball went into Kyle Pitts' direction. All right, group of pass catchers who could have scored or picked up big yards with a more accurate pass. Jaylen Waddle should still be running, guys. He had a chance to have a 77-yard house call, really put the final dagger in the Chicago Bears. Too bad Tua had a rare misfire and badly underthrew the speedy second-year receiver. So I have my quarterback article coming out tomorrow. I bring up how Tua, regardless of the underthrows on the deep balls, he's top two in any metric you want to look at, throwing the ball downfield. And you can certainly attribute that to Tyreek Hill. Just realize, know this is still one of the league's best passing games, even with some of these misses. And we did have some to Tyreek as well in this one, despite the big performance. Drew an end zone defensive pass interference, should have been a 33-yard touchdown with a better pass. And then later he caught a 39-yard bomb, probably could have been 57 yards and a touchdown with a better throw. Speaking of really good quarterbacks making a mistake or two out there, we did have Patrick Mahomes miss Travis Kelce on what should have easily been a 25-yard gain and prevented the need for overtime as a whole. This happened with under a minute left in the game. Unfortunately, rare miss from Mahomes, could not get to Kelce there, end up winning the game, not a big deal. Also, a Patriots wide receiver, Tyquan Thornton. I know he dudded, but really more Mac Jones induced than anything else. I mean, he wasn't wide open until his coverage defender fell down at the goal line. Could have, should have, would have been a 25-yard score. Too bad Mac Jones basically threw the ball into the bleachers. Few more other wide receivers, tight ends that had pretty clear missed touchdowns due to a bad pass. Tom Kennedy for the Lions missed out on a 7-yard touchdown from Jared Goff. Raiders running back Amir Abdullah had a 20-yard wheel route for a score, but Derek Carr overthrew him. Bennett Skowronek, the Rams wide receiver who continues to pretty much get more uses than Allen Robinson. He should have had an 8-yard touchdown, but Stafford skipped it in. Lamar Jackson, unfortunately, three appearances on this on Monday night. DeMarcus Robinson had two potential chances for touchdowns, and Josh Allen also had a third. Josh Oliver almost had a third. And finally, Saints quarterback Andy Dalton, wide open Marquez Callaway before the half for a 15-yard score. Unfortunately, sailed it high and long. Biggest touchdown drop of the week. Usually we have five or six, but the only one I actually counted as a straight up drop touchdown was Scotty Miller, who had that 7-yard score, hit him directly in the face and then fall to the ground on that. But Scotty doesn't know, guys, so maybe give him a little bit of a break. Also had several touchdowns, unfortunately nullified due to penalty. Cordero Patterson, my guy, Nate, didn't even realize this all of Sunday. Finally found out on Monday. Actually had a 38-yard touchdown run over left end. They got called back on both a tripping penalty and an offensive holding. So, yeah, I guess the hole was that big for a reason. Still realized Patterson almost had a trifecta of scores in his first game back. I think other than Kyle Pitts, the most sheeshful moment of the week, though, Kyler Murray had a 1-yard touchdown pass to DeAndre Hopkins at the end of the fourth quarter. And guess what? It didn't count because Robbie Anderson on the completely other side of the field didn't get set in time. And because of that, it was just a false start penalty and no touchdown for DeAndre Hopkins. So Robbie Anderson, I believe, has now played three games with the Arizona Cardinals. He has -4 yards in three games. That is not good. And I don't think you need any more advanced metrics to tell you that. A couple moments that were very close. It's tough to, you know, really blame one part because they were, you know, high difficulty plays, but very close nonetheless. Josh Allen, I mean, he had Stephon Diggs open deep down the left sideline. It was a 55-yard heave in the air. So I feel like, you know, wrong saying, oh man, Josh underthrew it, when how many quarterbacks would even get it 55 yards in the air in the first place? Just realized Diggs almost had a best case scenario 54-yard score. And then at the end of that game, Nate, I mean, for Allen to literally, he injures his flexor tendon, UCL, whatever the injury is. And like, when he threw the ball, like when that happened, like it skipped in and was like, oh my God, can Josh Allen not throw the football anymore? Very next play, 70 yards in the air, and it hit Gabe Davis seemingly in the chest. A little bit of a push off there, but again, just so close to being a huge, huge play. Garrett Wilson, back-to-back awesome performances, had obvious, maybe the catch of the week, filthy one-handed snag that would have made OBJ proud. Only problem was he was out of bounds when he came down with it. And then with the Bengals, man, two touchdowns that they've had a couple of these this year. T. Higgins, I remember, against the Jets early on in the year, that I'm still not convinced they weren't touchdowns. Tyler Boyd should have had a 2-yard score in the corner of the end zone. They reviewed it, challenged it, and even Dean Blandino, I believe, said it was a touchdown. Guess what? The refs reffing the game decided it wasn't. Joe Mixon scores the next play. Later in the game, Trenton Irwin looked like he scored a 15-yard touchdown in the right side of the end zone, but for the review show, didn't have 2 feet down. And guess who scores a touchdown on the next play? Joe Mixon himself again. Also had Chargers running back Austin Eckler. Yes, he got tackled when he tried to roll over the guy, but that first replay on red zone sure made it look like he did really just pull off that 37-yard catch and run touchdown. Alas, he was ruled down. And finally, just the top unrealized air yards of the week. Make sure you guys check out PFF's Josh Hermsmeyer's air yard by low air yards model each and every week. But I'm pretty sure he's going to be having some Bills and Packers on it in this one. I mentioned before, Kyle Pitts, 175 unrealized air yards. That was the most on the week. Also had Van Jefferson, 135. And then we had the Bills, Stephon Diggs and Gabriel Davis at 95 and 89. And finally, the Packers, Alan Lazard, and Samori Torrey at 71 and 64. So with that, everyone, we are officially on to week 10. Get those tears away. Wipe those tears off. We now got a week 10 matchup to go out there and win. So Nate, four teams on bye this week. Pretty, you know, formidable big two. Ravens and the Bengals, obviously coming out of the AFC North. Then the Patriots and Jets are, you know, other than Ramondre Stevenson, not too many guys out there that we can actively trust. So with that said, number one quarterback waiver wire edition of the week is the same guy it's been for the last three or 4 weeks, but that's not a bad thing, Nate. Go pick up Justin Fields already, everyone. I wish that we could move on to someone else, but Nate, here we are. I think last week he was owned in around 27-28% of ESPN leagues, and he's still only up to 47% of these ESPN leagues. So maybe every single person that we're talking to right now is in the 53% of leagues that has Justin Fields. But if not, man, go get Justin Fields. At this point, it's becoming tougher and tougher to keep him out of that top five, top six tier quarterbacks. And this week against the Lions, league worst defense and points per game, I have him in the top five, and I don't even feel bad about it, Nate.
Yeah, when you break the record for most rushing yards by a quarterback in a game and throwing three touchdowns is an afterthought, he's a starter for the rest of the season. Of course, the Lions matchup is great, but you can put him in your starting lineup the rest of the season. So go ahead, get him now and keep him going forward.
I will still give Lamar Jackson the benefit of the doubt. We saw that ridiculous broken tackle run. He is the best dual threat quarterback in the league. And we're not even talking about Fields passing right now. But just in terms of fantasy points, guys, no quarterback has more from purely rushing production than Justin Fields this season with 9.4 per game. Jalen Hurts at 8.6, Lamar Jackson 8.4, and Josh Allen at 7.9. Only other quarterbacks with even 7 fantasy points coming from purely rushing production. Some other quarterbacks, a slightly different style this week. We're going to focus a little bit more on the handcuff tiers at the end of the show, because let's face it, not the best week, you know, here for the old waiver wire, just without too many injuries happening, which, hey, always a good thing. We will take that. But some other quarterbacks to keep an eye on. I mentioned those big four with the rushing production: Fields, Hurts, Jackson, Allen. Coming in with fifth, just 6.8 fantasy points per game from rushing, is Daniel Jones. Coming off that bye week, pretty decent chance that he was left on the waiver wire, or someone just honestly couldn't keep two quarterbacks during the bye. So Giants are getting the Texans this week. I mean, pretty much a dream matchup that you would hope he can take advantage of against that soft front seven. Also have Marcus Mariota at 35%. Panthers, Falcons this week, so we get the Kyle Pitts experience out of the way before the weekend. Gotta love that. And finally, Kenny Pickett at just 5.5%. And I'm happy you included Pickett, Nate, because you really look at what the Steelers offense has had to deal with this year. And it's one of those things, again, where Fields, Kenny Pickett, and I understand Mike Tomlin's one of the best coaches in the game. He deserves the benefit of the doubt here with his decision making, but they bring in Pickett at halftime against the Jets defense that's 6th in EPA allowed per pass play. Next week at the Bills, who rank 5th. Next week versus the Buccaneers, who rank 8th. Had the Eagles before the bye in Philly. The only quote unquote easy matchup that wasn't against an objective top 10 pass defense came in week 7. And that was in Miami, coming off a game where he got discussed in a pretty much a rainstorm by the time the fourth quarter came around. So Nate, what are your rest of season expectations for Pickett and a condensed passing game now with Chase Claypool, obviously now in Chicago?
Yeah, I expect Claypool leaving to hurt a little bit, but not all that much. I think he's just someone that you hope gets better throughout his rookie season, as you hope all rookies do over the second half of the season, especially at quarterback. And with these, I always like to include a guy or two that's available in a ton of leagues, and Pickett's available in the vast majority of leagues, almost 95% of ESPN leagues. So if all these guys that we're talking about are always taken and you are looking for a quarterback, then Pickett's the one that I'd be looking for.
I had a tweet last week where I just took weeks 9 through 14 right before, you know, the fantasy playoffs, fantasy points per game allowed to each position to get an idea of the best and worst strength of schedules moving forward. And the Steelers, both quarterback and wide receiver, have one of the league's top 12 easiest schedules ahead of the fantasy playoffs. So not saying Pickett's going to be a stud, but hey, I mentioned those rushing fantasy points and he didn't crack. I think there were 7 or 8 quarterbacks with at least 5 fantasy points per game from rushing, but Pickett was right there on the outside looking in. So not saying he's going to be a star down the stretch, but at a minimum, I mean, this Steelers offense, Steelers ranked 31st, Rams ranked 32nd in terms of yards per play this year. I do think there's a little bit of hope for the Steelers to go from horrific to average. That's all I'm saying here, Nate. And I don't think it's the biggest, stretch of the imagination there. Jeff Wilson, still owned in just 44.9% of ESPN leagues against the Browns. Now, Nate, last week, you know, talking about this, I'm not sure if the trade had already happened or not, but my initial, just thoughts on the trade was that Jeff Wilson didn't really expect him to take over for Raheem Mostert, especially not in his first week on the field, and maybe not ever, because Mostert's been doing a very good job and I think has earned that starting role there in Miami. That said, I was really interested in Jeff Wilson as more so a handcuff that we can now really get behind, because even in the earlier parts of the year without Elijah Mitchell pre-CMC trade, he was still someone that we struggled to really consistently keep inside the top 20, because we had Debo involved. We had Kyle Juszczyk doing Kyle Juszczyk things in an offense that did not want to throw the ball to its running backs. But Jeff Wilson still has all that. And we'll get to the handcuff tiers, but he is as good of a handcuff as pretty much anyone you're going to find. But Nate, this usage, all of a sudden, the Jeff Wilson takeover, I'm not saying it's probable, but it does seem possible.
Yeah, it definitely looks like they were heading in that direction. It definitely helps that the head coach was the run game coordinator and then offensive coordinator for the 49ers. So a ton of experience working with each other already. In the game, they were switching off drives to begin with. Mostert had the first drive. Wilson came in. They did that for a little bit. But then the second half of the game, they switched to both players playing on drives. And it was consistently Wilson seeing more time than Mostert on those drives in the second half. So I wouldn't be surprised if Wilson is the primary running back for Miami going forward. And their schedule is pretty decent. So there's a chance that he's not just the handcuff, but he could be the guy in Miami.
As always, you can find all of Nate's fantastic waiver wire material on PFF.com. He's got his five to add, drop, buy low, sell high out on Tuesdays, and his regular waiver wire report on Mondays. And one of the things I love that you do, Nate, and it's also in your, my God, you got 20 million articles. I can't list them all at once, man, but in your Sunday reviews, which again, it's fun seeing all these snap counts and getting them all in real time. Guess who gets them all in real time? It's Nate and the fine folks, you know, fine data analysts over at PFF. And what Nate's been including this year, just a running back usage for all plays, early downs, goal lines, short yardage, third downs, and 2 minutes. So really, man, it was split just pretty much even in terms of just overall Jeff Wilson, 28 plays, and Raheem Mostert, 26. And yeah, we did start seeing a shift in Wilson's direction. The one spot that Mostert dominated was the 2 minute drill. He had all seven of those snaps, but Nate, that could also just be a matter of, hey, Mostert was the guy out there for the one or two drives where they were doing it. And if there was a situation where it would take Wilson maybe an extra week to really get ingrained in the offense, it'd probably be the 2 minute drill.
Yeah, it really was. They were rotating by drive and only had the three drives in the first half, so it was Mostert's turn to have a drive. So I believe that's the reason he was in on those plays, and we could very well see Wilson in that situation going forward, depending on how they're rotating in the future.
Remember, your fab does not carry over to next season. I don't think that'd be a pretty crazy league to be playing in. I don't hate that idea now that I think about it. But assuming that's not going to be the case, I don't think Jeff Wilson is someone to go ahead and take your final, you know, $50 and just throw them all on the guy. But Nate, he is someone where I do think, you know, when we've kind of been going through these running backs, it's like a kind of tiers in terms of like $10 or less that we want to do for him, or 10% or less, I should say. Or do you want to go like up to 40, 50%? I think Wilson settles right there in the middle in that 20-30% range where, yeah, we should have some decent standalone value. The problem is we are still an injury away from Mostert for really expecting too much out of this. Am I too low on Wilson? Would you be willing to go higher on the fab?
I'd probably be willing to go 30 to 35. Miami does have some really nice matchups coming up. So even if it stays this two-back committee, there will be situations where he'll be able to run the ball a lot and Mostert will also be able to see his.
Hey, if you need the guy, go get him right now. It's not a guarantee that we're going to have, you know, these great three-down running backs emerge down the road. So Jeff Wilson, the prime flex with benefits option that we're always looking for. Appreciate our guys checking us out live here on Tuesdays. Again, always get started usually shortly after 12:30 Eastern time. And our guy Seth is asking about some of the running back usage we got going on in Chicago, Nate. And conveniently, Khalil Herbert, our next guy up, still owned in 62% of ESPN leagues. So not a given he's going to be out there. But we did see for another straight week, David Montgomery really just take everything, man, in this backfield. 51 plays for Montgomery. Just 21 for Khalil Herbert. And this was a week after. I mean, Herbert found a way to get his touches, but I want to say he had like 14 carries on 23 total snaps. Like when he was out there, he was getting the ball against the Cowboys. We didn't quite see that again next week. So I see the stats, and I even broke this down in my running back article. I think in Herbert's case, this isn't the change of pace, you know, scat back that has better efficiency numbers than Montgomery. I checked, you know, their percentage of carries with at least 2 yards after contact, who's facing, you know, more rushes with at least eight defenders in the box. And Herbert was still winning out in terms of being a more efficient rusher, even after trying to give Montgomery the benefit of the doubt in those scenarios. The problem, Nate, we can think that. I can think that. You can think that. If the Bears don't think that, it's not going to help fantasy managers. Do you really see Khalil Herbert ever getting past this low usage flex play? Who, hey, he can get there on efficiency because he's a great football player. But David Montgomery probably always going to be a rather large thorn in the side of Khalil Herbert fantasy managers.
I think Montgomery will always be there. I think he's the better receiving back, so he'll continue to see plenty of snaps in the games. But ignoring this past week, the previous 2 weeks, Herbert was getting the ball a lot of the time when he was on the field. So even though he had a low percentage of snaps, he was consistently touching the ball when he was on the field, and that was getting him enough carries to be fantasy relevant. And what I'm really excited about him is some of the matchups he has Detroit, both this week and then in the fantasy championship week. Ooh. So if there's any matchup where Herbert's going to get plenty of carries and efficiency on those carries, it's going to be Detroit, since Chicago ideally can be winning those games, be up late, be running the ball in the fourth quarter, and that'll be Herbert's time to get a ton of carries. And that's when you need him the most, is both next week and the last week of the season, last fantasy week of the season.
Yes. We're going to be talking a lot more about running backs once we get to our handcuff tiers, but quickly, some other guys that Nate listed out that are owned in under 40% of ESPN leagues. Gus Edwards coming off that injury, but was someone that was listed as doubtful. So I do think a return in week 11 following this bye week is reasonable for Gus. Also have Chuba Hubbard, the guy that did work ahead of Deontay Foreman before getting that injury. He is also someone that does seem to be coming back sooner rather than later. Isaiah Pacheco, still the Chiefs starting running back, even though Jerick McKinnon continues to play more than everyone out there. But you could imagine a scenario where Pacheco's stranglehold on that job increases as the year goes on. Kyren Williams, as Nate said last week, is a lottery ticket. And a lot of times lottery tickets, you know, don't turn out to be much of anything. I do think that, you know, big built $2 billion or whatever lottery, this one source said someone won, one source says it didn't. I'm not sure if it was. Maybe Kyren Williams won. Maybe that's why he's the guy that's taking his sweet old time getting back from the IR. But yes, Kyren Williams does remain a lottery ticket in a fantasy league where you don't have many of them. And then there's Jalen Warren as well, still just 3% owned. And with the Steelers, man, I do think they're going to get more competitive, but would it be the wildest thing ever for this team to be 2-12, 2-13, Najee's foot still causing him problems, they shut him down, and Jalen Warren becomes this year's Rashad Penny, you know, Jeff Wilson guy down the stretch? I don't know. Maybe I just have too much exposure. I'm trying to, you know, speak it into reality. You could imagine, though. Before we get to wide receivers, I just have a pet peeve of mine, Nate. How come the lottery gets up to like $2.1 billion and people are like, oh, hey, we got to get on this lottery thing? Like, are you telling me like $100 million wouldn't be life-changing enough? I don't get this whole thing around the lottery. Okay, if you're in a workplace and it's just a fun thing, yeah, throw $5 in it, that's fine. But come on, Nate, give me like a $10,000 and that's going to be freaking amazing. I don't get the nationwide obsession with the lottery only when it gets this egregious amount. Come on.
It's just, you see everyone else doing it, so you want to get involved too. It's the social thing of everyone's trying to win the money. Everyone's imagining what life would be like if you are that rich. So since everyone else is doing it, you want in as well.
Hey, I'm playing the Million Maker every single Sunday. Like, I get it. I want to win a bunch of money too. I'm just saying, you know, that's always out there, always going to be
big. Only $1 million.
Only $1 million. All right, back to things that I actually somewhat know what I'm talking about here. I appreciate you guys putting up with my random dumb rants from time to time. We do have Odell Beckham Jr. apparently on the way back. And the interesting thing about this, Nate, for a guy that suffered an ACL tear in February, had another ACL tear a couple years ago. I mean, in best ball draft, it was hilarious for so long when like Beckham was going ahead of guys like Julio Jones, like Will Fuller, who, you know, we don't need to get in that whole situation. But just the injury part alone seemed to make it iffy if OBJ was going to come back and be healthy. But based on what we're hearing, he's fully cleared to go. And the Cowboys rumors just will not stop. Jerry Jones today said that Beckham would look good with the star on his helmet. And hey, I agree, man. OBJ would look good in any uniform out there. That said, he is only owned 18% of ESPN leagues. We can talk about, you know, what spots would give him the best overall ability to put up fantasy numbers. But speaking specifically of Dallas, Nate, because there does seem to be a lot of smoke in that situation, where would you see Beckham kind of falling into the rest of the season landscape? I still struggle to think this is going to be more than a wide receiver four or so. That said, it is a guy where with bye week still, you know, coming on, you know, heavy until week 14, could potentially help you out as a flex option down the road.
Yeah, I think he's definitely capable of being a wide receiver three, either in Dallas or wherever he ends up, since he's going to want to go to a team that's a playoff contender that has an opening at wide receiver. So any of those situations, regardless of what those five or six teams are, probably are a good fantasy situation for him. So he was able to last year be fantasy relevant with the Rams, even though he was the number two or three wide receiver at times in Los Angeles. So I think he's definitely capable of probably not being a top 10, top 15 wide receiver, but being someone that can be in fantasy starting lineups for a number of weeks, assuming that he is as healthy as he was last season.
I think it's a nice scoop now before he signs, because once he signs, people are going to all of a sudden be wanting to really go get him because it's OBJ, and he's always just going to have that group of super fans like myself, just remembering the good days and expecting, you know, everything to be super positive here moving forward. So, hey, if you can get a wide receiver three, wide receiver four for close to free on the waiver wire, go ahead. That said, I certainly wouldn't be putting down much fab to actually go ahead and go get OBJ, because again, anywhere he's going, Dallas, Buffalo, he's going to be at best the number two wide receiver, and I really do think it will probably be closer to three or four. I mean, hey, allegedly cleared and doing good, healthy, but we really still don't even know that part for sure, Nate. So it's exciting. Football is more fun, more entertaining with OBJ in the fold. I do doubt just how relevant he will be down the stretch in terms of a pure fantasy factor. Even the Rams' success, awfully touchdown dependent, not a guarantee he's going to be getting those same opportunities elsewhere. Another guy, Nate, that had all sorts of hype last season, didn't do much of anything even into this year for the first 6-7 weeks. But all of a sudden, Robbie Anderson gets traded, and now Terrence Marshall is playing an every down role in a Panthers offense that, yeah, we saw last week, still fully capable of, you know, putting together some horrific quarters back to back. That said, we have seen a little bit of a ceiling here, just 2 weeks removed from them scoring 34 points against the Falcons. And even the Tampa Bay game showed some nice flashes from PJ Walker. So Terrence Marshall, 4 catches, 87 yards last week. And then in week 9, he had 3 catches for 53 yards and a touchdown. Similar to OBJ, I don't think that Marshall really has any sort of room to leap into the top 24 at any point this year. But again, sometimes we get desperate. Sometimes we're in 14-team leagues. Terrence Marshall is someone that if it is week 14 and all of a sudden he's sneaking his way into the top 36, crazier things have happened.
Oh, yeah, we're getting to the point where plenty of players have already had their bye week, so you might not need a player who's as dependable on your bench. You might want someone who could get better as the season goes on, and I view him very similarly to a number of other rookie wide receivers, some of them that have been hurt recently, where you're just hoping that maybe they have an Amon-Ra St. Brown like end of season like he had last year, since Marshall's still only 22 years old, so younger than some of these rookie wide receivers, and didn't have that great of a year last year. So I view him very similarly of just maybe the Panthers offense can get things together by the end of the season, and at that point Marshall could be a very good play. But chances are he won't, but there's a chance he will.
There we go. That's it's like that Charles Barkley quote talking about some. It's like, you know what, guys, I'm 100% certain. Also, I'm just kind of making stuff up as I go. And that's fantasy football sometimes, guys. A chance it could happen, chance it could not. Some other wide receivers. These guys are owned in over 60% of the leagues, but God forbid they're still on your waiver wire. Go get them. Rondale Moore, who we talked about plenty, but just realize we had the two duds with him, and those both came in games without AJ Green and Robbie Anderson. So he had to line up more on the outside. When he's been in the slot, he's caught at least 6 passes in all 4 of those featured slot heavy games. So especially in full PPR scoring, becoming tougher and tougher to keep Rondale out of the top 36. And last week, hell, I had him wide receiver 26 overall. Also George Pickens without Chase Claypool. I mean, Nate, you can argue, even though Deontay Johnson has had more overall targets than Pickens with Kenny Pickett under center, I mean, you just published your rest of season rankings today. I'm curious what the disparity was between Deontay and Pickens.
It wasn't that large, since this should be an opportunity for Pickens to see a lot more targets going forward without Claypool on the field. We discussed it when the trade happened live last week, but the Steelers aren't going to be throwing that much to their new slot wide receiver just because they aren't going to be nearly as talented as the other wide receivers and tight end Pittsburgh has. So this is an opportunity for everyone to see their targets increase, but particularly Pickens.
Nate does have Deontay, wide receiver 29 in his rest of season rankings. George Pickens, just the wide receiver 34. So I do think that's a proper disparity between the guys. Also, Wan'Dale Robinson, just 21% owned in ESPN leagues. Isaiah McKenzie, coming off a game where he didn't put up much in the box score counting numbers, but we did see his usage really take a nice leap forward over Khalil Shakur. So looking at, you know, what's going to happen in the future with the Josh Allen injury, potential Case Keenum experience under center for a week or two. No, we wouldn't be liking McKenzie for that. But if we can just get that full-time slot role, this remains an explosive, you know, yak-friendly player in a great offense. Michael Gallup owned in just 42% of leagues. OBJ could complicate things there potentially, but still a guy where if the Cowboys ever have to put their foot on the gas just a little bit more in the passing game, you would expect Michael Gallup to have some bigger games down the stretch. Jahan Dotson seems to be pretty damn close to getting back. You know, similar to Gallup, I kind of question the overall upside of the Commanders' passing game, as we've kind of seen. It's like one guy kind of gets there per week, but Dotson was right there with Curtis and McLaurin earlier on the season before he did get injured. So very talented first round pick. You know, wouldn't be surprised if he does put together a few more solid performances before the season's over. And then we have Treylon Burks, who I was talking to Joanne McFarland on the Sunday Night Review about this, Nate, and reference your idea on Kyren Williams, you know, being a lottery ticket. And Joanne basically brought up the same point for Treylon, which is, hey, he's a lottery ticket and maybe nothing's going to come of it. This is the Titans offense that's still the only team in the NFL without a single top 24 week in terms of PPR scoring from a wide receiver. If anyone's going to be able to get there, you would think it would be their first round pick once he is healthy enough to return, which does seem to be sooner rather than later. At tight end, top waiver wire pickup of the week continues to be Hayden Hurst, owned in just 59% of ESPN leagues. He is on a bye, though, leaving us, Nate, with Greg Dulcich and Kate Otten as the other top two additions. Now, Otten, it is a little bit contingent on Cameron Brate continuing to miss time. I'm not really sure why they would bring Brate back and, you know, immediately just kick Otten out of the offense, because he has been a bit of a breath of fresh air over these past few weeks playing an every down role. I think that probably makes the top streaming option for this week Greg Dulcich for the Broncos, who so far, man, I know it's been a rough slide for these all the Albert O truthers out there, but Dulcich really on the other side, he's gotten the full-time role that we wanted Albert O to have, and honestly, he's looked pretty damn impressive out there with what he's been able to do. I believe it was Fantasy Points Scott Barrett who pointed out that Greg Dulcich in his first three NFL games had like the third most receiving yards all time of any tight end. So I know, I've seen it. He's had a couple big gains on busted coverage, but hey, that's the thing that happens when you're a tight end or wide receiver playing a near every down role, which is what Dulcich has. What are your rest of season expectations for Greg Dulcich as well as in week 10, Nate?
He's been a top 12 tight end every game that he's ever played in his career, so I think he's going to probably be a borderline starter every week going forward. So someone where if you have injuries at tight end or need a tight end, I'd definitely have him on your roster. If you don't have one of those five or six guys, then I'd probably try to have two tight ends on the roster and just go with whoever has the better matchup that week. But he's someone that should be one of those two tight ends on your team.
Nate has Dulcich as his tight end 13 the rest of the way, just a single spot behind Hayden Hurst, ahead of guys like Taysom Hill, Tyler Higbee, David Njoku, Evan Engram, and Dawson Knox. So, you know, we do have to worry about injuries still with David Njoku and all that, but truly Greg Dulcich right there in the mix. What a time to be alive. All right, everybody, before we get into our handcuff tiers, I do want to give a shout out to a couple of our lovely sponsors. Guys, you can make every play feel exciting with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, and their unbeatable offers. Right now, new customers can make any $5 NFL bet and get $200 in free bets if your team wins. Check this out. In addition to the usual bets, everyone can boost their winnings with DraftKings stepped up same game parlays. The clock is ticking on Ohio getting all this legalized. I cannot wait. And the first place I'm going to take my money is over there at DraftKings Sportsbook. So any fellow Ohioans listening, let's get in on some of these opening deals. And DraftKings is certainly a part of that. And guess what? To make things even sweeter, you can throw down stepped up same game parlays once per game day all season long. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code PFF to get $200 in free bets if your team wins. Just place a $5 bet on any football game only at DraftKings Sportsbook using code PFF. Also got to give some love to our friends over at Western Southern. The PFF Fantasy Football Podcast is sponsored by Western Southern Financial Group. While you focus on your roster moves, Western Southern helps advance your money moves. Buying your first home, plan to start a family, wondering how to make your money grow? Western Southern's playbook of life insurance, investment, and retirement solutions helps you rest assured on game day. Team up to understand needs and address goals with a game plan built just for you. Get started at westernsouthern.com/PFF. And of course, Nate, we got to have our weekly, daily, every single episode sleeper segment. Shout out to the fine folks over at Sleeper Fantasy. Nate and I both coming off a win in our PFF Fantasy League. Neither of us want to talk about the overall standings of that league. But hey, man, it's a week-to-week league, and at least in week 9, it was okay for us. But our official waiver wire pickup of the week, and hey, it's got to be Justin Fields again, Nate. And I feel ridiculous going back to the well with this guy again and again and again, because it does seem to get to the point where, you know, we're beating a dead horse here. But beating that dead horse keeps giving us a weekly top 5 fantasy signal caller, then we're going to keep on doing that. And that's exactly what Fields has been in each of these past 3 weeks. So yeah, early on in the season, it was terrible. I don't even blame you guys if, unfortunately, you cut the guy after the first 4 weeks. I mean, he was a QB 23, QB 28, QB 32, and 25 in the first 4 weeks of the season. All he's done in 5 weeks since is rip off QB 12, 9, 5, 5, and the overall QB 1 finish in that amazing performance against the Dolphins. So right now, it's the perfect fantasy football marriage for Fields of being a dual threat quarterback, being in an offense that, yeah, hey, I barked and bitched and moaned a lot about them not adding more talent around him. They finally gave him Claypool, better late than never. The passing game is looking up, and the defense is horrific after they've taken away Robert Quinn, Roquan Smith, and all the kind of last remaining jewels they had in that front seven. So we got a team that's always going to have to keep their foot on the gas because they don't have any other choice with how bad that defense is. I mean, this is really what led the Lions and Seahawks to be such fantasy-friendly offenses in the early parts of the season. Seahawks have started to fix their defense up a little bit, but don't be surprised if Justin Fields and company keep on keeping on down the stretch. Right now, he is one of the more fantasy-friendly quarterbacks in the entire game. Love to see that. All right, guys, now we would go through some handcuff tiers. So the thought process here was Nate and I were talking on Monday. And again, in a week where we didn't have that many major injuries, we're still talking about guys like Justin Fields. Didn't want to just give you guys a complete hour of guys that, again, we've already talked about slash aren't the sort of, you know, waiver wire assets we need to be completely losing our minds over. So every week on PFF.com, I have my running back article, you know, published on Wednesday. I understand if, you know, busy life, you got a family, you got a job, you can't necessarily get through 7K words of this, you know, with a fine microscope every single week, or, you know, not microscope, damn it, Ian, magnifying glass, whatever we're talking about. Anyway, in the course of this article, I do give handcuff tiers for every single backfield around the league. So what Nate and I wanted to do here was just go through some of the situations where we can actually expect a backup running back should an injury arise to get the sort of 3-down role that we're hoping for. Because as you guys can see, big difference between someone like Dalvin Cook or David Montgomery getting hurt, and we're confident in someone like Madison, like Khalil Herbert stepping into that every down role, and a situation where, like, hey, what happens if Daryl Henderson gets hurt in Los Angeles? No one freaking knows. So not every handcuff is created equal, and that's exactly what we're here to talk about today. So Nate, I have 4 tiers of handcuff running backs. Tier 1 are guys I expect to get pretty damn close to a 3-down role. Tier 2, more so pass catching guys that are going to be more fantasy friendly because they have that skill, probably still be in an upside RB2 range, but not getting the every down role. Tier 3, a little more uncertainty, guys that, okay, maybe we know who the lead back is going to be, but we have more questions on exactly how high they would rise in the rankings for a variety of reasons. And then tier 4 is just what the hell, probably would add a veteran addition, and there's just no real signs in the backfield of backups to feel good about. So with all that said, Nate, I have 9 tier 1 handcuffs right now in Chicago: Khalil Herbert, Kareem Hunt in Cleveland, Tony Pollard in Dallas, AJ Dillon in Green Bay, Alexander Mattison with the Vikings, Damian Harris with the Patriots, I think would be pretty tough to keep out of the picture should Ramondre Stevenson get hurt, Jaylen Warren with the Steelers, Rashad White with the Buccaneers, and Jeff Wilson with the Dolphins. So the two guys that I think continuously we see not owned in enough leagues are Jaylen Warren and Rashad White. And with Rashad White, Nate, we're even getting some murmurs. I believe CBS reported that Leonard Fournette, you know, quote unquote, really pissed off about, you know, getting pulled out of that game for Rashad White. So out of that group, Nate, again, Bears, Browns, Cowboys, Packers, Vikings, Patriots, Steelers, Buccaneers, and Dolphins, any of those handcuffed running backs where you disagree that they'd have a 3-down role, and just any overall thoughts on guys like Rashad White and Jaylen Warren still just not being owned in enough fantasy leagues?
The one that I might bump down a little bit is the Brown situation. Jerome Ford, who did great in the preseason, his practice period just opened up. He's been on injured reserve this whole time. So I think if Nick Chubb were to get injured, we could see multiple backs. So we saw D'Ernest Johnson play very well last year in his limited time. So I could see Hunt not seeing quite as much playing time as he would have a year or two ago if Nick Chubb were to get injured then. So I think Cleveland's the one I might bump down a little bit. And then in Tampa Bay, I know we've been talking about White all season, but ideally we'd like to see him play a little bit better than Leonard Fournette in order to feel a little more okay with it. We saw Keyshawn Vaughn see a little bit of playing time this past week as well. So that's also a little concerning that if Fournette were to get injured, the fact that they got Vaughn involved this week and how little White's done in his limited time, little concern there.
I get in like to arguments periodically with Browns fans talking about this handcuff situation. And the guys, I wish they gave Nick Chubb 25 plus touches every single game. Sadly, the one time we've seen them really feature any running back in this offense, it wasn't Nick Chubb. It wasn't Kareem Hunt. It was D'Ernest Johnson when both those guys were out. That's really the only time under Kevin Stefanski that we have seen them turn over the entire backfield to one guy. I am optimistic that Hunt, who we have seen have a couple games without Nick Chubb, unfortunately, he's been kind of getting hurt around the same time Chubb has over the years. But while D'Ernest Johnson, they do take Chubb off the field for D'Ernest without Hunt on passing downs, I'm just more optimistic that Hunt would keep more of his pass down work. So maybe you could argue he would be a tier two guy, someone that we'd be living a little bit more on the pass down work than the early down stuff. So getting into that tier two, used to be Nyheim Hines in Indianapolis, you know, being a situation where I think without Jonathan Taylor, we could expect him to have, you know, that middle class man's Austin Ekeler role. But as things continue to, you know, evolve in this NFL, Nate, we don't have a ton of running backs that I think would necessarily have that middle-class man's Austin Ekeler role, other than two sneaky ones. We have Kenneth Gainwell with the Eagles. God forbid something happens to Miles Sanders. Yes, Boston Scott would stay annoyingly involved, but Gainwell has consistently been the number two in this offense. And who's the one getting the targets? Already Gainwell could be even more without Miles Sanders in the picture. And also Dontrell Hilliard with the Titans, someone that last year, okay, we didn't exactly see him take over the backfield without Derrick Henry. Deontay Foreman was a factor, and I do think Hassan Haskins has done enough for them to have a lot of that early down work. But Dontrell Hilliard, Nate, is someone that we've already seen popping a lot this year in terms of what he can do as a pass catcher. And even last season, like I believe he had over 100 yards against the Patriots. Like they trust him to run the ball enough between the tackles to think that 10 to 12 carries could be on the table. And again, what we're really excited about is the potential for 5+ targets. So Kenneth Gainwell and Dontrell Hilliard, I don't think they're cracking the top 12 if Sanders and Henry go down, but these will still be, again, full PPR friendly running backs that I think would jump in the top 20 fairly quickly. God forbid something happened to Henry or Sanders.
I definitely agree with you on Hilliard with Tennessee. I think he'd be the featured guy. It would just kind of depend on how, what the matchup is for how well he'd do, since we saw when they played Kansas City, the offense did basically nothing for the last three quarters of the game and overtime. So it'll depend on the offense if they weren't willing to give it to Henry all that much for all that time. But with Philadelphia, I do think that's going to be an interesting situation. We saw earlier in the season before Boston Scott got injured that Boston Scott was consistently playing more on early downs than Kenneth Gainwell, which is why I kind of backed off of Gainwell in my waiver articles for a bit. But we did see this past week Gainwell played a little bit more than Scott on early downs, which part of that was their hurry-up offense where they had a good third down play, got the first down, and hurried up into first down. So Gainwell got to stay on the field. So I'm just not exactly sure how much Scott would end up playing. I would not be surprised if Scott led the team in carries, even though Gainwell would definitely see a boost in playing time.
The one good news is I found this out last night when he got elevated. Jordan Howard on the Saints. So there's not a possibility, at least for now, Jordan Howard coming back like he did last season and really making this complicated. So, hey, Derrick Henry, someone that we continue to see, you know, getting these large workloads. I guess last week was a little bit of an exception. It was surprising to see him only get 15 or 16 carries the way that game was going. But, hey, if the big dog is going to go down, it's going to change things in a hurry. And honestly, guys, like if you have the roster space, especially in some of these bigger super flex leagues, I know Malik Willis hasn't been doing much for us this year just overall, but if you can imagine a scenario where Tannehill remains banged up, maybe he gets an injury reaggravated, they haven't needed to fully turn the game over to Malik Willis because they have Derrick Henry, so he's going to be the engine of that offense. But if Tannehill and Derrick Henry go down, all of a sudden they're not going to have many other choices but to just hopefully let Malik Willis go out there and run his heart out. And when you do start looking ahead to the fantasy playoffs, Nate, You get in week 14, the Jaguars. Week 15, the Chargers, who still can't exactly stop the run. And in week 16, the Houston Texans. So again, we're two injuries away from this potentially going Malik Willis's way, but don't sleep on the possibility of either Malik Willis or Dontrell Hilliard really making some noise down the stretch. All right, tier three now. These are guys who we do have someone that we think would lead the backfield, but there's enough uncertainty with the usage involved that I'm not guaranteeing they'd be top 12 or even top 20 options down the rest of the stretch. So first of all, we did have my guy, Captain Spock, mentioning Eli Mitchell as potential tier one back. And my only thing with Eli Mitchell, and we kind of saw this last year, like he absolutely dominated all the usage in the 49ers backfield. And we had like an RB2 because of that. Unfortunately, it's the same thing with Jeff Wilson that we talked about earlier. In San Francisco, even though he's a little banged up right now, when he's out there, Debo Samuel is going to be involved in the run game, and so will Kyle Juszczyk. And oh yeah, Jimmy Garoppolo really doesn't check the ball down. I mean, before Christian McCaffrey got there, this offense was dead last in targets to running back. So while Mitchell has the sort of, you know, tier one type of usage in terms of the snap rate and stuff, San Francisco is a unique enough offense with the way they use their backs that I'm just not positive he'd be someone that we need to jam into the top 15 every week. That said, Nate, still the clear handcuff and someone that'd be a quality starter. I'm just kind of down the best case upside for someone like Elijah Mitchell.
Yeah, he'd be a two down back because they'd use Kyle Juszczyk on third downs like they did all of last year and like they were doing with Jeff Wilson earlier in the year. So even though it feels like an every down, it's because no other halfbacks are getting the carries, he'd still be two down back. Debo Samuel would still get his work. So he'd have a really high floor, but lower upside.
And that is the tendency with a lot of these situations. They're not just one injury away. They're two injuries away, which can happen. Look at Kenneth Walker, basically. Penny and Homer go out for a couple of weeks, and he's just absolutely taken over. And I understand Homer didn't, you know, be that big of an issue even when he came back to the equation. But Ramondre Stevenson, we've gone through, you know, all the things that went right for him. It can happen, but right now we are trying to prioritize the guys like a Jalen Warren, like a, you know, Tony Pollard, Rashad White, where they are one injury away from immediately being in that top tier conversation. With the Jets, they brought in James Robinson, complicating things a little bit. Whether you want to call Michael Carter or James Robinson the starter, if either guy got hurt, we would feel confident about them having a bigger role. That said, Nate, I would think Ty Johnson is going to still be involved. And honestly, it's been a backfield where they haven't been all that willing to turn it over to anyone other than Breece Hall. Would still expect multiple running backs to be involved on a weekly basis, even if the lead back is someone we can start to put in that low-end RB2 conversation. I think a similar sentiment is true for the Cardinals and Eno Benjamin when James Conner misses time. Now, losing Darrell Williams helps, but Keyontae Ingram, there we haven't seen Cliff Kingsbury quite as willing to give his running backs that true 80, 90% workhorse role like he has in past years. So, Eno, not the worst handcuff in the world, but again, we're not getting quite that same sort of every down role that we have seen in Arizona in past years. With the Falcons, we saw without Cordarrelle Patterson. Yeah, Tyler Allgeier, even Caleb Huntley, they're going to push for 15-plus touches a week, but they're always going to have those two and even Avery Williams involved in the game plan. In Buffalo, like, Nate, if something happened to Devin Singletary, I just don't think we have enough information right now to know if James Cook or Nyheim Hines would take the lead, and I'm not sure Buffalo trusts either of them to be the early down guy. Putting my homerism aside, Nate, I think Duke Johnson could feasibly, in that scenario, get elevated and take some of that early down work. Similar sentiment in Kansas City, who I actually have as a tier four handcuff situation because Ronald Jones remains on their practice squad and he could come up and make some noise potentially. Also, the Panthers, the Bengals, the Broncos, the Lions, the Texans, and the Giants, all situations where I'm just not overly confident about this backup stepping in and getting anything close to what we're seeing from the starter with the Giants and Matt Breida. We already saw Brian Daboll not be all that willing to give him a job when they were together in Buffalo with the Texans. Really? Dario Gubowale, Royce Freeman, Rex Burkhead without Damian Pierce? That would be muddled. We've seen in Detroit without DeAndre Swift, they keep Craig Reynolds and Justin Jackson involved on pass downs as much as we would want Jamal Williams to have that role. Denver, freaking guys, like, the whole thing with Denver this whole time, we keep talking Latavius Murray, Melvin Gordon, all this. They wouldn't give Javonte Williams even 50% snaps every single week. Bringing in, obviously, oh my gosh, Nate, who'd they bring in? I'm forgetting. Oh, Chase Edmonds. Yes. Bringing in Chase Edmonds now, even more muddled situation. I just don't think it's really worth pursuing. And the Panthers, we saw it with Chuba and Deontay Foreman. I think out of all these situations, the way things are changing, the only one that I'd really want to go out of my way to potentially prioritize is the Bengals. And that's because it's constantly evolving right now. Chris Evans did suffer a knee injury last week. Nate, I'm not sure if you've seen any extra, you know, information about that. But in that case, if Chris Evans is out of the picture, Samaje Perine is suddenly only one injury away instead of two from having a potential 20 touch per week workload.
Yeah, and Chris Evans really hasn't played much on offense all season long, just a snap here or there throughout the season. So I don't think they've even thought as highly as Evans this year as they were doing last year. So I could see Perine definitely seeing the majority of both carries and pass routes. I would say in Carolina, I do think Chuba Hubbard would see a ton of snaps, since I think right now we're seeing they don't trust Foreman and passing downs, but they do trust Hubbard in passing downs, and he did see the majority of carries that one three quarters that we saw so far. So I think Hubbard would see a decent amount of snaps and touches if Foreman were to get injured. And I do think Rex Burkhead in Houston, we could see something similar to what we saw in week one of Burkhead seeing the majority of the work, even though Houston's offense isn't great. So it might not even matter if he's playing over 70% of snaps.
And again, we're talking about the workload here. We are far better predicting the workload than we are the efficiency. So these look, Jamal Williams has 8 or 9 rushing touchdowns this year. He's pulled off plenty of RB1 weeks. It's just tough to really expect him to be a tier one handcuff because we've consistently seen them keep 3 running backs involved, even in the absence of DeAndre Swift. It's the same thing with Elijah Mitchell. It's a good handcuff to have. Elijah Mitchell is a good handcuff. I just can't confidently put him in even inside probably the top 10 handcuffs because there are guys in other situations who we are more confident in seldom leaving the field, and when they're on the field, having a more fantasy-friendly role. In Washington, right now it's interesting because J.D. McKissic is out with a neck injury. So with that out, okay, now we're down to 2 backs. We can live with 2 running back committees in the year 2020. 3 and 4 are when things get a bit more complicated. So from that standpoint, it's reasonable. But as we saw last week, Nate, Taylor Heinicke not always going to be the guy to check the ball down to his backs. And with Gibson and Brian Robinson still is moving, you know, fairly just neither guy is really taking over at this point. And I'm not sure you could expect, you know, without another injury to really be feeling all that great about starting either guy on a week-to-week basis. Do you have a feel about the Las Vegas Raiders backfield? Because we did have that, you know, game a couple weeks ago where Josh Jacobs didn't make the flight and then he got the flight on Saturday and he went out. I tend to think Zamir White would be the guy, but I don't see him having the same sort of role as Josh Jacobs. I think Abdullah and Brandon Bolden would become even more involved. So Zamir White for me, again, someone more so probably like a Deontay Foreman or Chuba Hubbard where, okay, maybe we do find a way to get them in that low-end RB2 tier. I don't think you're going to be sitting here, though, in week 18 going, man, happy I got Zamir White on the squad, though.
Yeah, I could very well see Amir Abdullah getting at least half of the early down work. I know plenty has probably changed since the preseason, since the Hall of Fame game even, but Amir Abdullah was playing ahead of Zamir White on early downs, and then Amir Abdullah didn't play the rest of the preseason since he was considered among the starters at that point. So we saw plenty of Zamir White throughout the rest of the preseason, but that was because they trusted Abdullah enough not to play him. So it could be a mess there.
And you listening, stop laughing about preseason usage. It's the only data point we have. Grain of salt, absolutely. We're not telling you to 100% expect this. Nate let off his statement with that. Just realize, hey, the first team preseason usage, that's the stuff we care about. It does tend to be predictive of what we see in the season, especially in situations like with the Raiders where we have nothing else to go off of with this current group of running backs. And finally, tier 4 backfields that, again, I think are at major risk of just simply adding a veteran if something happens to the starter. I do have the Jaguars. You know, call me crazy, Nate, I don't think Jamichael Hasty would take over the situation if Travis Etienne gets hurt. The Rams, I mean, I wouldn't even feel confident saying Henderson's going to lead the backfield next week, let alone if something happens to the guy. With the Seahawks, I just don't think either Travis Homer or DJ Dallas have the trust from that coaching staff to be an early down back. I mean, look, we already saw Seahawks last year, you know, drag Adrian Peterson, you know, back into the fold. Devontae Freeman's out there. You know, we have seen them go to the veteran running back well before during the season. With the Ravens, I mean, come on, this was unusable in weeks 1 through 2 without Dobbins and Edwards. I know Kenyon Drake is starting to get on a little bit more, but Dobbins, Edwards, both guys were kind of expecting to be back. And Justice Hill and Mike Davis have also continued to work work into the equation even without them in the picture. In Kansas City, I mentioned this before, but CH or Pacheco goes down. I mean, Ronald Jones is just going to come up and all of a sudden probably take those snaps, and it's all just a committee anyway with Jerick McKinnon soaking up so much pass down work with the Chargers. It did seem like Joshua Kelly was starting to be the clear-cut number two guy when healthy, but he's been hurt, and now we got Sony Michel in addition to Larry Roundtree and Isaiah Spiller out there. And then finally with the Saints, another situation where I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, a veteran gets added to the mix. They've been willing to do that over the years. And even with Mark Ingram hurt right now, let's say he wasn't injured, we saw with Alvin Kamara out, none of those guys were usable. At best, it was a two running back split with Ingram and Latavius Murray, who's obviously now in Denver. So Jaguars, Rams, Seahawks, Ravens, Chiefs, Chargers, and Saints. Any of those teams you think I'm wrong on here, Nate? Because I just don't see much upside in any of the backups.
I think with the Los Angeles Chargers, once Joshua Kelly is back, I do think they were trusting Kelly the most out of all the backups that I think Kelly would see at least the majority of snaps with Los Angeles. And with Kelly out, Isaiah Spiller did see his highest percentage of snaps that he's seen so far this year, this past week. Definitely saw a lot more than Sony Michel, who they were trying to kind of phase out of the offense before the Kelly injury as well. So if Eckler were to get hurt this week, I could very well see Spiller having a decent-sized role going forward at both of the top two backs stay injured.
So just quickly to recap a little bit here, I think these are about 2, 4, 6. I got about 7, 8 running backs who shouldn't be owned in like way over 50% of leagues out there. And I think they do give you pretty solid handcuff upside. So Khalil Herbert, someone we talked about before, just over that 60% mark. We saw early this year with David Montgomery out, someone that was immediately in the top 15 options. And that was for a far worse Bears offense than what we've seen over these past few weeks. It wouldn't be outrageous to have Herbert as a legit RB1, God forbid something happened to David Montgomery. With the Patriots, Damien Harris, I get it. He was sick last week, and we are going to have, Ramondre Stevenson still being the lead guy. But it's not like Damien Harris can't catch a football. And similar to Ramondre Stevenson getting this role, like, they just don't have anyone else at this point. So if Ramondre leaves the equation, look what happened when Damien leaves the equation. Ramondre barely comes off the field 20-plus touches per game. I do think that would be on the table for Damien Harris as well. And Pittsburgh, Jaylen Warren, again, right now he's eating way more into Najee Harris's usage than we even expected going into the year. It's one of these unique situations where if Najee comes off the field, I do think that Jaylen Warren all of a sudden probably have a bigger workload than even what Najee is having right now. Rashad White in Tampa Bay, also Jeff Wilson in Miami, guys we talked about, Kenneth Gainwell and Dontrell Hilliard in Philadelphia and Tennessee. Not quite in the same upper level tier because they are more one-dimensional pass down backs, but hey, we'll take targets over rush attempts when all else is equal in fantasy land. And finally, we got to look a little bit at that Chris Evans situation, but to Nate's point, really hasn't had, you know, the sort of uses on offense that we would expect even as a backup already. So Samaje Perine, really someone that's available all over the place. And if something happens to Joe Mixon, who, hey, the guy's been healthy 2 years running, I'm knocking on wood, not trying to jinx anything, guys, but Samaje Perine would all of a sudden be the guy that Nate and I are starting the show with and telling you to use like 40-50% of your fab on, because even though he's not Joe Mixon, he's still a guy that would have that role. And man, 15 to 20 probably touches per week for a guy in a Bengals offense that we've seen capable of scoring all sorts of points. So anything else you want to add just about general handcuff practices, Nate? Because this is the time of year where, again, last season, you know, Rashad Penny was an absolute nobody at this point because he was injured and everything. But if we are able to pinpoint a couple of these, the Jaylen Warrens, the Samaje Perines of the world, it can make a big difference in a hurry down the stretch.
Yeah, the only thing that I'd probably add as a technicality more than anything, I think with the Patriots, Damien Harris would probably only have the two down role. I don't think they would play him on third downs. Just based on everything we've seen, they did just get J.J. Taylor to the active roster. He played third downs in the preseason. He played significantly this past week. But we've seen Damien Harris with that two-down role still see 20 carries a game, which is the best that we've seen him do in the past, and that's been plenty good for top 10 fantasy performances at times.
I might be getting a little carried away with tier one, probably more so right there with Nelijah Mitchell, especially if we do ever see Ty Montgomery come back off IR. And stop laughing about Ty Montgomery. He legit had that pass down role in week one. Only 60 minutes, I get it, but it's a fact that happened in the year 2022. So again, everyone, you can catch my handcuffed tears and just further RB breakdowns every single week in my RB article for every single team. I give the ranks, the usage, the handcuffed tier, and some of the matchup notes, and then I explore a key question that I think is most prominent for each and every team, always at pff.com. Just one of many pieces we have up there. And Nate, my goodness, you have more than just about anyone else. Let the people know what they can find from you over at pff.com.
Sure. So I have my recaps up from all of the games on Sunday, the game last night on Monday, the waiver wire article that went up yesterday, my top 10 reactions to week 9 that went up yesterday. Today went up my 5-tab, 5 to drop, 5 to buy low, 5 to sell high. My rest of season rankings also went up today. Tomorrow it'll be the rankings for this upcoming week, and then start set the day after that.
I saw Nate have to pull up literally the workload. You can't even remember it. It's that big. Continuing to do great stuff. And again, can't say enough good things about Nate's Sunday grind at Nate Yonke PFF on Twitter. Go shoot the man a follow. He's one of the biggest grinders in the entire industry. So appreciate you, Nate, and appreciate all you guys tuning in, as always, to another edition of the PFF Fantasy Football Podcast. Week 10's here. Playoff push. Let's go win some freaking matchups, everyone. So for Nate, I'm Ian. Thanks so much for tuning in. And until next time, take care, everybody.